of a series of six lessons, and probably there are a few who have said, I don't know why we're studying that. I don't know anybody this kooky. But there are other people who do. Almost every time I present an aspect of this, somebody says, I have a neighbor, I have a friend, and I didn't realize what was involved in some of these things. So some may not have profited as much as others, but we hope you have been able to see a few things during the course of this study that are important, and how the scriptures refute these ideas, which we'll look at as we close tonight. Let's go to Matthew chapter 13, verses 54 through 56. This will come up later in the discussion. In Matthew 13, beginning with verse 34, when he came to his own country, he taught them in their synagogue so that they were astonished and said, where did this man get this wisdom and mighty works? Is not this the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary? And his brothers, James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas? And his sisters, are they not all with us? Where then did this man get these things? All right, so you might want to keep that in mind. There are some things associated with New Ageism that are upbeat, that are inspiring, that are uplifting. Other beliefs could be classified as blatantly bizarre and downright daffy. But even these weird concepts, many of them are not going to cause anybody any harm, at least not physically, perhaps spiritually. But what about those who reject the tenets of New Ageism? How do New Agers handle that? Well, many would simply not care at all. Many are would just view us as Bible-believing monotheists that are unenlightened, that are narrow-minded, short-sighted individuals who are robbing themselves of great insights and experiences. But that would probably be about the extent of their annoyance with us. Others, however, are more openly hostile. Constance Cumby tells of a conversation with a woman deeply committed to New Ageism, and during dinner together, this conversation occurred. The woman said, it's just not right. Not right. That book should not be allowed. It's too misleading. To which she replied, what book? The Bible. Now, some do have an attitude like this. They're openly hostile to the scriptures. She was critical of the Bible, even though she had not read it, because it tended to confuse her. Ramtha feels clearly antagonistic about the scriptures. Devil, he asks, I looked far and wide for the creature, and I found him nowhere, but I found him thriving in the hearts of frenzied entities in a fervor of madness to save the world from sins. That is where he is. You understand? Well, this is certainly an interesting illustration. The individual who possesses evangelistic zeal is possessed by the devil, according to Ramtha. What an illustration this is of putting darkness for light, which Isaiah talks about in chapter 5 and verse 20. But for some, this kind of thinking is only the beginning. From this point on, the plot not only thickens, it turns diabolical. From a number of sources, Doug Grithwis put together the following composite. Yes, the new age of peace, light and love awaits us, but we must first experience a cleansing or purgation of planetary problem spots. These blots on the biosphere are typically described as those less evolved souls who do not see all as one or all as God, and who cling to such old age notions as sin. Human finitude, that is, that we only have one life. The uniqueness of Jesus Christ, yeah, they cling to these old things. And the need for eternal redemption. John Randolph Price channels somebody named Asher. He's written a couple of New Age books and is very friendly with Asher, whom he claims speaks through him. Nature will soon enter her cleansing cycle, in which individuals with lower vibratory rates, that is, monotheists, if you're a Jew or a Christian or a Muslim and you believe in one God, then you have a lower rate than others, will be removed from the planet during the next two decades. Now, do not worry about this prediction, because it was made over 20 years ago and it hasn't happened. So he didn't quite come through with that deal, fortunately. Does this cleansing, however, we might ask, of the blots of the biosphere refer to murder? Possibly it could, but of course, if it did, it would only be done for the advancement of mankind and the positive evolution of man. So in that case, it would probably be all right. Certainly, such cleansing would not violate New Age tenets. McLean's mentor, David, said, "I mean that 6 million Jews did not really die, only their bodies died." What kind of thinking is that? Well, New Age. They'll come back. They'll have another incarnation. So there's no big deal about 6 million people dying, according to this type of thinking. We would do well to remember that in karma, there are no victims. And those who are massacred will have more incarnations. New Ageism is a fatalistic system, which means the majority may just simply be resigned to whatever occurs. Death is not regarded as the end of anything. And you might say, well, you know, it's impossible to think that way, isn't it? Sirhan Sirhan, who assassinated Robert Kennedy, was heavily influenced by New Age thinking. And in fact, after being put in prison, the first book he asked for was Helena Petrovna Blavatsky's The Secret Doctrine. She was one of the founders of the modern New Age theology. Jim Jones and his People's Temple were patterned after a man that called himself Father Divine. What does that indicate? Men like these are dangerous because they elevate themselves above God and above the Bible. Not everyone may know this, but Jim Jones, for example, would quote from the Bible and then throw it on the ground and kick it to show that he had more authority than the Bible did. Yes, they really believe that. Now, I know nobody likes to hear about Adolf Hitler, because every time people have a disagreement, somebody says, well, you're just like the Nazis, when, of course, most of the time, that's not even close. But let me ask you, what do you know about Adolf Hitler? While Hitler was in Vienna pursuing a career as an architect and artist, he spent his spare time in occult bookstores and libraries. Transcendent states of consciousness and mind expansion fascinated him. Yoga and astrology proved too slow for his ambitions. He decided to accelerate the process by supplementing meditation with drugs. Mescaline was used to transport him to the highest state of consciousness, where he could look into what New Agers and occultists call the Akashic Record, a demonic version of not only historical, but future events. It's all there in the Akashic Records, of course. He apparently didn't read up to 1944 and 45 while he was there. Extermination of Jews and Gypsies, which Hitler participated in, was not called killing. It was called a cleansing action. Does that sound familiar? The parallels between Nazi ideology and New Ageism are at some points very striking and very similar. As part of his government, Hitler even had a Bureau of the Occult. Do you know any government that has that? A Bureau of the Occult? When the Allies conquered Berlin, they were surprised to find the corpses of over 1,000 Tibetans. Yes, Hitler was very much into this, which makes it laughable when opponents of Christianity try to say, oh, Hitler was a Christian. Far from it. He had no connection with Christianity. Philosophically, Hitler was willing to go any direction to achieve any kind of knowledge, the occult, mysticism, anywhere but the Bible. Such is hardly a startling fact. Those who reject the Bible have already demonstrated they're willing to go in any other direction, haven't they? Even Shirley MacLaine admits that violence belongs to the negative side of the force, her words. Well, what's the attraction to this fantasy-laden religion? One advantage is the so-called appeal to freedom. This is one of its drawing cards, the appeal to freedom, which is a word that they use to characterize the absence of restraint, the absence of self-control. Of course, Christianity teaches the exact opposite. It teaches us to have self-control. False religious teachers, even within the bounds of Christianity, were promising liberty to make their followers in their own image. Remember our study a year or two ago of 2 Peter, the book? Remember in chapter 2? That there were people in the church promising people liberty, but making them slaves of corruption. This is not a new concept. This is not simply a New Age concept. Even some in the church were advocating this in the first century. How much easier is it for those not tied to an objective system of morality to be free to do whatever they desire? Of course, not everyone enticed by New Ageism wants to be immoral, but it's an appeal for quite a few people. Then the second thing, the second appeal of New Ageism is that it promises inner peace. And remember, according to the power of suggestion, many people will feel that they have achieved that. And let's face it, that's appealing. The world does not offer inner peace. We have conflicts and wars constantly that devastate countries. Many innocent people are victimized by crimes. And then some New Age guru comes along and expresses the sentiments of the great invocation, is it any wonder that people are attracted to it? And just in case you haven't ever seen the great invocation, here's what it says. from the point of light within the mind of God, let the light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on the earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the heart of man. Let Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and it may seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Now you can see why that might appeal to a large number of people. It sounds very peaceful. It sounds, where could you object to it? It sounds wonderful. And so these lofty sentiments often capture the imaginations of people. At the end of the advertisement for the Lord Maitreya, remember he was supposed to be all of everybody rolled into one who was coming back and who never showed. At the end of that advertisement were these lines: without sharing, there can be no justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Without peace, there can be no future. Now, you got to admit, that's going to attract people. People are going to look at that and say, I like the way that sounds. And then add to this the relaxation techniques, the emphasis on new and different ideas that they have never heard before, and focusing on one's inner self, which is always popular. These things all serve to draw devotees to the New Age concepts. Now, a third allurement is the promise of power. The promise of power. People often feel battered by many of life's problems over which they have no control. The situation we're in now is undoubtedly one of those. How wonderful to hear that you are a God with unlimited power, which New Age tells you. The evidence to support such a conclusion is slight. A little imagination can go a long way and produce vivid memories. But here's one that told by Elliot Miller, who was in a state of New Age euphoria before he left the New Age movement. Here's what he writes. I was surging with power. It was raining, and so I decided to put my power to a test. Based on the belief that all reality is one mind and that a Christ is so connected to the mind that he can control external reality, as Jesus did with his miracles, I looked up and the completely overcast sky and confidently commanded the rain to stop and the sun to shine. Immediately the clouds parted and the afternoon became sunny and dry. My power surge continued to accelerate. Well, I don't think he had anything to do with the clouds disappearing, but in his mind he thought he did. He thought he brought it about. I don't know if he checked a weather forecast earlier or not, but nevertheless, promises of liberty, freedom, peace, and power form a potent trio of temptations, not unlike the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. In fact, that we read about in 1 John 2:15, liberty allows a person to experience whatever fleshly desires he wants. So there's the lust of the flesh. And the pride of life is precisely the appeal of power in thinking that man can be like God. That's being lifted up with pride. And as far as the lust of the eyes is concerned, the New Age has caused people to turn those eyes inward and experience oneself, and people generally like what they see there when they look inward to themselves. Now, lest anyone think that only kooky people are attracted to New Ageism, consider what the author of The Aquarian's Conspiracy wrote. Marilyn Ferguson wrote this: "The Aquarian conspirators range across all levels of income and education, from the humblest to the highest. There are school teachers and office workers, famous scientists, government officials and lawmakers, artists and millionaires, taxi drivers and celebrities, leaders in medicine, education, law, psychology. Some are open in their advocacy, and their names may be familiar. Others are quiet about their involvement, believing they may be more effective if they are not identified with ideas that have all too often been misunderstood." Well, let's look at how the New Age compares to the Scriptures. We're not ready for that yet. Well, maybe we are. Now, let's back up to here. Okay. "Though appealing in some respects, the philosophy of the New Age is to be rejected for a number of reasons, particularly because it contradicts the Bible. And that is all the reason anybody needs to reject it. The fact that it contradicts the Scriptures on every measurable point. The inspired Word of God contains lofty morals and ethics, calls upon people to be responsible for their actions, and promises a day on which all shall be judged. New Agers tell us that we are gods, that we should be allowed to commit any immorality that we see fit, and that we have millions of years to reincarnate ourselves and work out our karma. The destiny of the obedient believer of the Bible is heaven and eternal blessedness. The destiny of the New Ager is uncertain, either absorption into the cosmos or extinction. Neither one of those sounds very attractive, does it? But even on a lesser scale, New Ageism is full of contradictions and misinformation. Shirley's David implies that Jesus taught reincarnation. That's what Christ was trying to tell us. Everything we say or do in our lives, every day has a consequence, and where we find ourselves today is a result of where we were before. If everyone felt that, understood it in their gut, the world would be a better place. And we shall reap what we sow, bad or good, and we should be aware of it. Well, he finally said something true. And we'll talk about that just a little bit more. He said that Jesus said that. Actually, it was Paul who wrote that in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 7. But Jesus and Paul, neither one, talked about reincarnation. When Paul penned this verse, he was not in the midst of a discussion on reincarnation. Furthermore, we need to look at the next verse to be aware of that. Galatians chapter 6, verses 7 and 8. "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. For he who sows in his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption. But he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life." Now, if you sow to the flesh on this earth, you will have corruption as a result. But this is not karma. This is just a natural process. A person who lives fleshly, acts fleshly, has his mind only on fleshly matters, will of the flesh reap corruption. Now, the person who is spiritual will reap far greater things, but he jumps to the judgment on that one and says he will have life everlasting. But there is no reaping here that implies a future incarnation. Similarly, erroneous was this allegation by David. Christ said it, know thyself. And then be true to it. Know thyself has usually been attributed to Socrates, sometimes Plato, Pythagoras, or the Oracle at Delphi, but generally speaking of Socrates, not Jesus. He's a little confused on that point. The Bible teaches us to be faithful to God, to be faithful to his word, to obey God rather than men, but it never says be true to yourselves. Where is that found? Actually, that's from Hamlet. Polonius told his son Laertes, to thine own self be true. But it isn't in the Bible. Other misconceptions concerning the Bible abound, as well as historical inaccuracies. Now, we already talked this morning about Edgar Cayce, the sleeping prophet, and how he misunderstood that Jesus was incarnated as both Adam and Enoch at the same time. He also predicted that Atlantis would rise again in 1968 or 1969. Well, that didn't happen. And you know what Moses said about that? He said, if somebody, in Deuteronomy 18, comes along and says something will come to pass and it does not come to pass, you shouldn't be afraid of that person, because he's not speaking from God. God doesn't say things are going to come to pass and then nothing happens. If he says it's going to come to pass, it comes to pass. And so that's just one more way we know that Cayce was in error. Once again, the question deserves to be asked, if New Agers cannot be trusted with verifiable objective facts, how can they be trusted in the realm of the subjective? Well, of course, they cannot. Now, to summarize, the New Age religion accepts, by and large, evolution. The Bible says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. They accept evolution, but in Genesis 1, 26 through 28, God created man in his own image. So, New Ageism contradicts the Bible at the very beginning, at its very core. And so then let's go on to number two, reincarnation, which we've talked about today, the doctrine of a second chance. No, Hebrews 9:28, it's appointed unto man once to die, but after this, the judgment. Third, karma, which is a compassionless, fatalistic doctrine, which involves some sort of cosmic justice, but not the justice meted out by Jesus on the day of judgment. And we read John 5, 27 through 29 this morning in that regard. Karma's explanation for why bad things happen to good people is, you deserve it. You know, that would take out a whole shelf at the bookstore. I've got a whole shelf of books on trying to explain why bad things happen to good people. But you can summarize it in three words. You deserve it. End of discussion. Well, that's what karma teaches. And I don't know who would be satisfied by that, but apparently some are. Although arrived at differently from the way that Job's friends reached their conclusions about Job, the amount of comfort is the same. None. You deserve it. How does that help you? How does that make you feel? As Job would say in Job 16:2, miserable comforters are you all. They didn't help him. They told him it was his fault that he was suffering. He knew that it was not, but that's all the consolation he got from everyone, and that is, you deserve it. So he said, miserable comforters are you all. Karma is a doctrine of despair for everybody except the elite. You know, the elite deserve what they have. Now, the others don't, but the elite do. So if you are happy and prosperous and everything is going well, why? It's because you deserve it, according to this theology. Nirvana contradicts the bliss of heaven and the agony of hell. Many people are eager to get rid of the idea of eternal suffering, but here's the truth of the matter from Revelation chapter 20, verses 14 and 15. Then death and Hades were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. Now, of course, if you've been incarnated 10 times, then you've died several times. But that's not the way the Bible presents it, is it? There is the first death where you die physically. And then there is the death where you are cast into the lake of fire. And that is the second death. And anyone not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. The idea of incarnations and karma and nirvana apparently makes people feel good, that especially if they have never repented of their sins, because under this system, you don't need to repent of your sins. It'll work itself out later. Unfortunately, the willingness of the majority to reject biblical doctrine of hell has not changed reality. It's still going to happen just as it was described in Revelation 20, verses 14 and 15. Then next, there's spiritual perfection that comes through Jesus, according to what the Bible teaches us. 2 Peter chapter 1, verses 2 through 11. We have escaped the world through lusts that we once obeyed. We have put on all of the characteristics that God desires us to have. And if we do that, there is no way we'll be blocked from entering into heaven. It is guaranteed, if we have done all that God has required us, that we will be there and we shall never fall. That's how real perfection comes about. But in New Ageism, that is replaced by the incarnation thing. New Ageism has no concept of sin or disobedience or even worrying about offending a holy God. Jesus said to say, under New Age theology, has no useful function. Why did he die on the cross? There's nothing effective there if reincarnation is true. And so most of the New Testament just simply becomes gibberish. All of the miracles Jesus did, they were for nothing, basically. His death on the cross was for nothing. That is the upshot of this kind of thinking. Then number six, the exaltation of self. Jesus said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." Apparently, New Age thinking is, if I have to sing somebody's praises, they may as well be mine. And so they look inward and find out that they're very much like God, and therefore they can sing their own praises. That's totally antithetic to what Christianity teaches. Jesus has always, and God has always pointed out that God is the one to be exalted. Christ is the one to be exalted. Whoever exalts himself will be abased, and whoever humbles himself shall be exalted. Matthew 23 and verse 12. Now, one last thing. Christ is nothing more than a wise man. So you can discount what Peter said, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." We don't, New Agers don't accept that. They just want Jesus to be a wise man. And Shirley's inaccurate friend David says this, A lot of people think that those 18 missing years of Jesus' life, remember nothing is said from the time he is 12 until the age of 30 when he starts his ministry, nothing is said of those 18 missing years. They were spent traveling in and around India and Tibet and Persia and the Near East. There are all kinds of legends and story about a man who sounds just like Christ. His description is matched everywhere, and he said he was the Son of God, and he corroborated the beliefs of the Hindus that reincarnation was in fact true. Well, I guarantee you that wasn't Jesus. They say he became an adept yogi and mastered complete control over his body and the physical world around him. He evidently went around doing all these miracles that were later recorded in the Bible and tried to teach people that they could do the same things if they got more in touch with their spiritual selves and their own potential power. Well, first of all, Jesus never went around trying to teach people how to work miracles. In fact, he told them they were seeking the wrong thing in John chapter 6. He told them they needed to seek spiritual food from above, and that it was wrong just to be interested in him because he could multiply bread. That was the wrong motivation. And so this whole concept is in error as it regards Jesus. Furthermore, when Jesus did miracles, remember the passage we read at the outset? People said what? Where did this man get this knowledge? We know his brothers and sisters. Where did he get this knowledge? If David's hypothesis were correct, they should have surmised something like this. I'll bet this has something to do with those 18 years Jesus disappeared. He's acted a little flaky ever since he floated back from India. That's what they should have said, if what this guy says is true. But of course, it is not. Worst of all, this alternate philosophy will rob a person of true happiness now. Remember, Jesus said, I have come that they might have life and that they might have it more abundantly. John 10:10. Failing to develop a love of the truth is also spiritually fatal. New Agers don't really care about what a truth is. That's why one can believe one thing and one something else, and it doesn't really matter. It's a chaotic system. You can believe whatever you want and still be under the umbrella of New Ageism. But those who do not have a love of the truth shall perish. 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 10. Many like the sentiments of Jeremy Ripken, who captured the spirit of New Ageism. Here's what Ripken said. We no longer feel ourselves to be guests in someone else's home, and therefore obliged to make our behavior conform with a set of pre-existing cosmic rules. It's our creation now. We make the rules. We establish the parameters of reality. We create the world, and because we do, we no longer feel beholden to outside forces. We no longer have to justify our behavior, for we are now the architects of the universe. We are responsible to nothing outside ourselves, for we are the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever and ever. Can you imagine anybody being more conceited than to write a statement like that? Why do people accept this over the scriptures? Well, G.K. Chesterton probably summed it up best when he said, the Christian ideal has not been tried and found wanting. It has been found instead difficult and left untried. And that is probably the fact of the matter. People do not want God to tell them what is right or what is wrong. They want to be able to do it themselves. And therefore, they can have morality any way they want. They do not like God giving us things from heaven, from an objective source. They would rather everything be subjective. How do I feel about it? But how conceited is Rifkin and others of the New Age movement? The Bible teaches that it's a narrow road that leads to eternal life. If you have never walked this road to the cross, if you have never understood the sacrifice Jesus made in order to save people who have committed sin, without any question, they have violated God's laws. But Jesus died so that you could have forgiveness of those sins and an abundant life and be saved and learn the truth and all those other things that we mentioned at the close this morning. If you have never walked this road, isn't it time you begin the journey? Especially if you are watching on video and have not studied these matters very carefully. Surely you can see the difference between the kind of religion that man invents and the kind of religion that actually comes from God. These commandments are not to restrict our freedom. They are to keep us free from the power of sin and from its degradation and the end that it gives us, which is eternal death. If we can help you through some means, write to us or text us or some way communicate with us, and we will be happy to study further with you on this matter. If you have some other reason why you need spiritual help this evening, we want you to let us know that also. And you can do that now as we stand and sing.